Mu'el al-Hawa, Mother Woe to Love, Palestinian folk song adapted by Al-Fajr Group. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A panel of UN independent experts has accused Israel of engaging in a campaign of starvation and genocide in Gaza. Michael Fakhry, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, and the other experts write, "We declare that Israel's intentional and targeted starvation campaign against the Palestinian people is a form of genocidal violence and has resulted in famine across all of Gaza. We call upon the international community to prioritize the delivery of humanitarian aid by land, by any means necessary, end Israel's siege and establish a ceasefire," the United Nations experts wrote. The effects of the famine are being felt across Gaza. This is Ghanima Joma, a Palestinian mother speaking from Nasser Hospital in Gaza's Khan Yunis, next to her son, Yunis Joma.
My son suffers from malnutrition due to the war and because of the tinned food he's eating. Before the war, he used to eat all kinds of food, meats, eggs, all kinds. Now things have gone up in price or there is shortage due to the closing of the crossings. A week ago, I was with him here in the hospital and every day his health is deteriorating. My wish is that my child recovers and gets back to how he was before the war and that he finds his rights like any other child. I hope his health improves to how it was before the war. I wish that I don't lose my child. Looking at him, lying in front of me, I feel that he is dying in front of my eyes and I can't do anything for him.
We're joined right now by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He is a Palestinian physician, an activist, a politician who serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. He usually joins us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank, but today is joining us from Washington, D.C. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Dr. Barghouti. If you can start off by responding to that woman who is sitting next to her dying, starving son.
Well, there are no words to describe the feelings of this woman or our feelings when we watch that. But what we see today is a purposeful act of starvation, one form of war crime where Israel is using starvation as an instrument of war. And that's why UNICEF has been warning the last few days that 50,000 children now are at risk of death and at risk of famine because of the starvation policy of the Israeli government. And that is, of course, horrifying. But if you allow me, Amy, I want to alert you to something even more important. I think today we are witnessing probably the most dangerous day in this whole war on Gaza, in this whole aggression on Gaza. The Israeli army is trying to evict hundreds of thousands of people from Gaza City and from northern parts of Gaza in an effort to completely ethnically cleanse Gaza City. And they are threatening people that they would bombard them in every possible way if they don't move. And the people of Gaza are resilient. They refuse to leave. They say, we are ready even to face death, but not leave one more time by this terrible Israeli forces who are trying to ethnically cleanse us. We cannot take this insult one more time. And I think that's why it's very dangerous. And I want to explain that what Netanyahu is doing now, what his fascist government is doing now in Gaza, is really trying to achieve through this terrible bombardment that you've just described, which took the lives of more than 40 people, and through this act of trying to ethnically cleanse all the population of Gaza City, I think he's aiming at three goals. The first one is to undermine completely any negotiations that are taking place to achieve ceasefire and any negotiations to stop this aggression that is taking place on the people of Gaza. Second, I think this reveals that the real intention of Netanyahu and Gallant and all the Israeli government has never changed. Their main goal is the total ethnic cleansing of all of Gaza people and all of the Gaza Strip. And finally, I think This shows that Netanyahu's real intention is to maintain the Israeli occupation of Gaza. He wants to completely ethnically cleanse the whole of the north of Gaza and Gaza City as well, and then concentrate the Israeli occupation in that area and then move forward. And that, of course, fits very well with the news that we've just received that the Israeli army is already starting building permanent bases of the military in the northern part and in Gaza City. This is a very dangerous element. This is a very dangerous moment, and it will carry in it in itself two major risks: a total ethnic cleansing of Gaza City, but in addition to that, terrible, terrible, terrible massacre that could happen because people are refusing to leave and the Israelis would start bombarding. And this would not have happened if it wasn't for this terrible silence from the whole world, if it wasn't from the cover that was provided to the Israeli, including by, unfortunately, the American administration. If no moves are made immediately by the whole world community, by the International Criminal Court, which should issue the indictment of both Netanyahu and Gallant, if the International Court of Justice does not immediately issue an order of stopping this terrible genocide and this terrible war on Gaza, and if the world community does not engage immediately on pressuring Israel and even threatening sanctions of Israel, this Netanyahu government will lead the situation into the most terrible massacre since the beginning of this terrible aggression on Gaza, which has already taken the lives of no less than 48,000 people, if we count the people under the rubble, and maybe even more than that. There are 87,000 people who are injured, many of whom will not continue to live because there is no medical facility to treat them, since Israel destroyed most of the medical facilities. I've just been talking to our teams in Gaza, the Palestinian medical relief teams, and they tell me that in Gaza City now, there is no service whatsoever except medical relief there, because the Baptist Hospital has been forced to be evacuated. Injured people there are there without doctors, without proper care. Our guys are trying to help them in every possible way, but the whole of Gaza City is now without medical services except the mobile teams of medical relief. That is a very dangerous situation. And it could exacerbate in every possible way. And that's why what I'm talking about is an urgent situation. And this is an urgent call to the whole world, to the United Nations, to international organizations, to humanitarian organizations, to the people who want to save lives of Palestinians, that they should move immediately, because what we could see now is a terrible, terrible development, not only of ethnic cleansing, but horrible massacres that could take place against the Palestinian population of Gaza.
Mustafa Barghouti, we usually speak to you in Ramallah. Why are you in Washington, D.C. right now? And what is your demand of the Biden administration? As you can see, if you're watching any of the media in the United States, there's very little television coverage of what's happening in Gaza. It's all about Biden's mental health and his physical diminishment. If you can talk about, yet there's the NATO summit, of course, happening right now with world leaders gathered in Washington, D.C., what your demands are on not only Biden, but the others as well.
Well, as you know, Amy, for 7.5 years, I was never granted a visa to come here. So I don't know, by a strike of luck or because there was so much pressure from the Palestinian community here, which invited me to come and speak to them. And that was the main purpose of my visit here, to speak to Palestinian activists, to Palestinian community in the United States. I got a one-entry visa, and I decided to use it. And I am also trying to meet as many legislators as possible, as many people in the media and in other to alert them to what's happening in Gaza, and to mobilize every possible resources to help the steadfastness of the people of Gaza, but also to stop this terrible aggression. My message to those who are meeting in Washington is very clear. You're playing with fire. What's happening in Gaza is showing the whole world that there is no international law anymore, that there is no respect whatsoever anymore for the so-called human rights. All your talks about human rights and democracy and all your talks about international order are out of the window. They mean nothing now when the whole world sees that Israel is enjoying the utmost amount of impunity, the utmost amount of support while it is committing this terrible massacre. $20 billion of military aid from your administration, the American administration, from your taxpayers, to those who are committing now three war crimes in parallel: genocide, ethnic cleansing, and collective punishment, including starvation of children and women and civilians. This is unacceptable. And what is happening in Gaza will have a terrible impact on the whole world, because it sends one message, that there is no international law anymore, that there is no human rights anymore, that anybody who has power can do whatever they want, whenever they want, and as they want. That is the message that is getting out, and that is going to be a terribly undermining situation for the security and safety and peace all over the world. I think the main responsible here is the American administration, and especially Biden administration, who could have done much, much, much more to stop this war and to stop this atrocity. And now that the ethnic cleansing of no less than 400,000 people is just about to happen, leading to maybe the total ethnic cleansing of Gaza, this is the moment when people have to interfere. There is an element of urgency here, and people have to move. And I'm telling you, the message I got from the people of Gaza today, I just been talking to them. They say, we're not going to leave anymore. We're not going to listen to Israeli instructions. Whatever it takes, we will die and not leave our homes, and we will die and not leave our homes. We're not going to be subjected to this Israeli imposition of ethnic cleansing. That's why I'm saying there is a very important element of urgency here, and people have to move very quickly and very soon to stop this terrible atrocity that Netanyahu and his fascist government, with people like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, are just about to commit.
So the Biden administration has been saying that the U.S. ceasefire proposal has been supported by Netanyahu, though he denied that, but was being obstructed by, not accepted by, Hamas. Now Hamas says that they will accept the ceasefire proposal, even though it's not immediately calling for a permanent ceasefire. But Netanyahu, and now I wanted to read from the Times of Israel, the headline, "Security officials shocked by PM's announcement of Gaza non-negotiables report." Security officials were caught off guard Sunday when Prime Minister Netanyahu publicly announced a list of non-negotiables for the ongoing hostage negotiations with Hamas, the Hebrew media is reporting. An unnamed security official told the Ynet news site that the statement by Netanyahu's office was inappropriate conduct that will harm the chances of bringing the hostages back home. Can you talk about this state of negotiations now in Doha, when you head of you have the head of U.S. intelligence, William Burns, there, the head of Israeli intelligence, Mossad, Barnea, there? What is happening? And do you agree with some of these Israeli officials who are saying it was meant to derail this last negotiation?
I think everybody in Israel knows. Every intelligence person in the United States probably already know that the reality is that Netanyahu is continuously undermining any possibility of reaching an agreement. He played games already several times. There was a moment a few months ago when a proposal was presented to Hamas, and the Americans said that Israel is accepting that proposal. Hamas accepted it, but then Netanyahu retreated and undermined it. When Mr. Biden announced his initiative, saying that it is an Israeli proposal, Netanyahu never confirmed that. And when it got into serious negotiations, as it is happening now, and Hamas said they are accepting and showed an utmost amount of flexibility, to my knowledge, Netanyahu is now escalating the situation in Gaza. This is not the first time he does that. When he is trying now to ethnically cleanse 400,000 people from Gaza City, how could negotiations work? So Netanyahu continuously plays games to undermine any possibility of an agreement. This man doesn't care about the Israeli prisoners. He wants them all killed. He doesn't care about the lives of any of them. The families of these Israeli prisoners know that very well. All Netanyahu cares about is his own personal interest. That's not my opinion only. It's the opinion of so many Israeli leaders. And I think Netanyahu wants only to continue this war as long as it takes. And he wants to avoid the fact that he, because he knows very well that the end of this war will mean the end of his political career. He will be investigated for his failure on the 7th of October. He will be investigated for his failure in running this war. And he will be also presented to the courts for four cases of corruption that are following him, each of which could take him to jail. So he doesn't care about anybody. He cares only about himself. As I said, maybe on one of your programs, this man is ready to kill his mother to stay in power. And now he's risking the lives of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians and maybe the lives of many Israelis because all he cares about is his own interest. But that is not only simply his personal interest. He is sitting in a government that is increasingly fascist. And he has fascist people in his government like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. And these people want the total and complete ethnic cleansing of all Palestinians. They speak frankly and openly, like Ben-Gvir, who is the Minister of Internal Security, about executing all Palestinian prisoners. They say that. They declare every morning that all Palestinians must be evicted, not only from Gaza, but also from the West Bank. Smotrich keeps telling, we should fill the West Bank with settlements and settlers so that Palestinians would lose any hope of a state of their own and then have to leave, which is ethnic cleansing, or accept a life of subjugation, which is apartheid, or die, which is exactly the genocide they are trying to commit now in Gaza. It's a terrible situation. Netanyahu will not be restrained except with Palestinian steadfastness and resistance and sanctions immediately on his government.
Well, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, I want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian physician, activist, politician, serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative, usually in Ramallah, speaking to us for the first time in years from Washington, D.C. Coming up, dozens of world leaders are in Washington to mark the 75th anniversary of the NATO military alliance. We'll speak with a German lawmaker who came to D.C. to protest the summit. Stay with us. Army of Love, first ever solo rock record of Tom Morello, featuring and co-written by his son, Roman Morello. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's hosting heads of state from NATO member nations for a three-day summit in Washington, D.C. to mark the 75th anniversary of the nuclear-armed military alliance. NATO's expanded from 12 founding member states to 32. Sweden's at the summit as a full NATO member for the first time. Now, Ukraine's path to membership in the alliance is, quote, irreversible, according to a leaked version of a joint declaration expected to be released today. In his opening address, President Biden pledged further NATO support for Ukraine against Russia's invasion.
The United States, Germany, the Netherlands, Romania, and Italy will provide Ukraine with the equipment for five additional strategic air defense systems. And in the coming months, the United States and our partners intend to provide Ukraine with dozens of additional tactical air defense systems. The United States will make sure that when we export critical air defense interceptors, Ukraine goes to the front of the line.
Also on Tuesday, President Biden awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to outgoing NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. The incoming NATO head, former Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte, who has been called the Trump Whisperer for an episode in 2018 when he convinced then-President Trump that NATO funding from other countries was increasing, as Trump had demanded. Rutte is seen as someone who could deter Trump from leaving NATO if he's re-elected. Over this past weekend, an anti-NATO protest was held in Washington, D.C. Speakers included German parliament member Seven Dagdalen.
We need peace instead of NATO. We need, at long last, to stand up for democratic and popular sovereignty and to reject the indignity of being a vassal state of Washington, which is just about all we have gotten from the ruling coalition in Berlin. Peace, not NATO.
German lawmaker Seven Dagdalen joins us now, still in Washington, D.C. She's a member of the German parliament with the Wagenknecht Alliance and a member of the NATO Parliamentary Assembly. Her forthcoming book is titled NATO, A Reckoning with the Atlantic Alliance. Her new piece for Consortium News is headlined 75 Years of NATO, 75 Years of Denial. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Seven Dagdalen. If you can explain why you came to Washington, D.C., and give us your history of NATO, what you think it's most important to understand.
Thanks for having me, Amy. I think the most important thing about the history of NATO is that it's a history of denial, that they have three great myths. The first is that it is a defense alliance, and at least after 1999, with the aggression against the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, we know it is a war alliance. They breached the international law. They were bombing Belgrade 79 days, even television stations, the Chinese embassy, and 20 years of war in Afghanistan. The aggression against Iraq, the aggression 2011 against Libya, that shows us this is just a lie with a defensive alliance. The second great myth of the NATO is that they are alliance, a collective of democracies against authoritarian regimes. And this is a historic lie. Just one example, one of the founding member states was Portugal, under the fascist dictator Salazar, who tortured Africans in concentration camps in Mozambique, in Angola. So the NATO had never problem with fascist dictators. Even the bilateral treaties between the United States and the Spanish dictator Franco was at stake. And the third great myth of the NATO is that they are an alliance of values and human rights. But how can you talk about human rights and values if you still have the torture center in Guantanamo Bay where people are tortured in the war on terrorism of the United States, or 14 years of prosecution of torture against a journalist like Julian Assange, whose crime was to expose U.S. war crimes in Iraq or NATO war crimes in Afghanistan, or even, according to the well-known Brown University in the United States, that in the last 20 years, the wars of the United States and their allies killed more than 4.5 million people. And if we look to Gaza, which is unconditionally supported by the United States and the NATO, and especially, for example, from Germany, we see it's a hypocrisy to talk about human rights if they are complicit to all the crimes done by the Israeli government. I mean, killing 15,000 children in Gaza, you cannot justify that with the Of course, the legitimate right of self-defense, but this war with more than 15,000 death children is not a, not an act of self-defense anymore, and the NATO is complicit to this war. So we do have this great news, and I think it was about time on the 75th anniversary to do a reckoning with all these crimes.
One of the summit's crucial goals is to offer Ukraine an irreversible path to NATO membership. Of course, Ukrainian President Zelensky is in the United States right now. How sustainable is NATO's continued military support for Ukraine? Do you see it getting in the way of any kind of negotiation that would end the war?
Well, first of all, we have to see that the NATO head of state and government are going to deepen their strategy in the proxy war in Ukraine. That means even more weapons and even more money for Ukraine. And on the other side, less money for their own population, for healthcare, for education, for infrastructure, or for affordable social housing, because this is the other side of this coin. That they have social cuts on the other side to finance this money going to Ukraine on and the weapons. And I found it very remarkable the last days, even though I do not agree on many things of the Hungarian head of state, Mr. Viktor Orban, but I found it very remarkable how much he has been criticized for just trying to have a dialogue. And I think it's the right way to go, what he is doing with his trips to Kiev first, and then to Moscow, and then to Beijing. And now in Washington, he is trying to have a dialogue, because whoever wants to stop the killing in Ukraine, he has to send diplomats and not weapons.
Let me ask you about Germany, where you are from. You're a member of parliament there. The U.S. is the largest arms supplier to Israel. Germany is the second largest arms supplier. This is the 75th anniversary of NATO. What are the implications of NATO's support for Israel right now?
Well, the implications are that the NATO lost, even if they had at least a tiny little bit of moral integrity. They lost every moral integrity, at least in the global south, with their unconditional support for the, in parts, very extreme right wing government of Benjamin Netanyahu. And even in Europe, for example, we do have support for recognition of the Palestinian state by three member states like Ireland, Spain, and Norway, because they want to stop
this unconditional
support.
And Sweden's already done it.
Yeah, and they want to stop this unconditional support. So you have rising contradictions and crisis within the European Union and the NATO states, according to this unconditional support. And in Germany, it's rising because, as you said, we are the second biggest supplier of weapons we've been, actually. And we've been lawsuited before the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Nicaragua did an indictment against the weapon deliveries.
And
pardon?
We have 5 seconds.
And I think the most important thing is that we as Germany have to go our own sovereign, independent foreign policy. And
we have
not
to leave it there. Seven Dagelin is a German parliament member joining us from Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us.
Listen to Home of Burnaby Rock, CJSF's Lux Rock Electronic Show. 2 hours of relative power each and every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., and repeats every Thursday, 10 to midnight, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Do it.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.